So for years, I've been trying to figure out how we can promote the idea that we don't have to fight nature with our agriculture, or with our entire life for that matter. We just have to figure out how to integrate back into it. So this is an interview I did with Wild Farm Alliance on Earth Day. And we talk about how to integrate farming practices with wild habitats, which really enhance both. The farms get, when it's done right, the farms get all the ecosystem services of the beneficial insects and birds and biomass in the soil. So it's kind of like regenerative agriculture, but a little bit different in that it's more focused on the wild habitat, whereas regenerative agriculture seems to be mostly focused on soil health. I love regenerative agriculture as well. But this takes it to the next level. So if you're interested in how to create, even in a permaculture context or in your backyard or on a larger farming context, I think you'll get a bunch of nuggets out of this little interview. And we talk about hedgerows, beneficial insects, how to create habitat for that, and beneficial bird populations, how to create the right conditions for those birds to be attracted to your site. It's primarily focused on a Mediterranean climate, like here in California, but there's lots of Mediterranean climates around the world. So if you're in one of those, this will be specifically applicable to you. But I do think that the broad concepts, even if you're in another climate zone, will still be applicable. You might have to change the species a little bit. We do get into some of the species recommendations for hedgerows and attracting insects and attracting the birds. So, without further ado, my interview with Wild Farming Alliance.
Hi, my name is Nicholas Filanino. I work with Wild Farm Alliance based in California, based in Watsonville.
And what does Wild Farm Alliance do?
We're an organization. We mostly work in California, but we're a nationwide organization. Our main gig is helping farmers work with the wild rather than against it, and we're a habitat-based organization integrating agricultural landscapes and wild ecosystems into the same sphere rather than, you know, separating them like they've been for so long.
And is the idea to sort of render ecosystem services by the beneficial insects and plants and animals, or a little bit beyond that, or fusion of the two?
Exactly. I mean, so we are, you know, working in both senses. So we're ecologists. We're a team of ecologists and farmers. So we work with farmers to help, you know, make their systems work better, less pests, help with, you know, water, you know, using less water. We're helping with increase bird populations to help control pests, insects, birds, and rodents. You know, plants, hedgerows are used for so many different things, like different plantings, like help with pesticide drift, you know, create micropolitan.
You use hedgerows for pesticide drift?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Pesticide, you know, hedgerows can be a barrier to roads, so dust, you know, dust is a way a lot of diseases get onto crops. Use it as a dust screen, as a pesticide drift screen, as, you know, creating microclimates for plants. We have, we work with some coffee growers and banana growers in Southern California.
Oh,
that
sweet.
They need like a specifically warm microclimate, and we create these crazy wind barriers with native plants.
I had no idea that there were coffee and banana growers in Southern California.
Yep,
that's amazing.
Around Santa Barbara. Yeah, we
really?
Work with some.
Wow, that's
cool. Yeah,
really
cool
that's
group of people.
So a lot of my viewers are interested in sort of the specifics about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So what would be it? So let's just keep it simple. Let's, you know, like our kind of Zone 9 coastal California climate that we're in here, Mediterranean, basically Mediterranean climate. What would be, you know, like a simple pollinator, beneficial insect hedgerow that you would, you know, it's sort of generic. I know you can't do it generic because it's all site specific, but if you could just kind of maybe give us a couple of basics.
You know, the things that come up, you know, right off the bat in terms of great survivor plants, good bang for your buck, available at nurseries, will provide habitat for beneficial insects and beneficial birds, provides pollinator. I'm like making a hedgerow that's made up of coyote brush, so that's Baccharis pilularis. Ceanothus species. You know, this could be your dark star, your concha, your caramel creeper, any of those types of ceanothus, great insectary plants. I'm putting coffee berry in there. I love manzanitas. They're a bit slow growing.
Can you say, like, in each, in a couple of, for example, with the coffee berry, what would be the purpose of the coffee berry in terms of, like, ecosystem services?
Yeah, coffee berry? Coffee berry, they have, well, they have berries, so they'll provide berries for beneficial birds in the off season, as well as they have flowers, and they're a good hedge plant, so... You know, they just woody habitat. Parasitoids are associated with woody habitat.
And can you explain parasitoids? This is the second time I've heard this term, but it's hard for I just learned it, and I'm really excited about it. Can you explain what it is?
So parasitoid wasps are it's a really cool thing. So pest control on farms. A lot of your pests are soft-bodied type lepidopterans, mealybugs. Any type of soft-bodied insect.
So wait a minute, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
A mealybug is a pest? It's going to eat parts of my plants?
Could be. Yeah, could there's be. I mean, mealybugs go by a lot of different terms. But yeah, parasitoids, they're called parasitoids because they are not parasites exactly. They're these wasps that will come in and lay their eggs into the pest. And the eggs will incubate inside the pest and then hatch and eat.
Just like
pest.
Alien.
Just like Alien, exactly. Alien was a parasitoid, not a parasite. So these
try not to shake the camera while I'm laughing.
So these beneficial insects, and there's so many different predators, and there's so much research that needs to be done still, but it's part of an integrated pest management system where, you know, when you're providing more diversity on your farms, we're seeing studies show that you're going to get a higher population and diversity of beneficial insects, which is going to lead to, you know, less pest problems.
And my viewers are definitely on board with that. So specifically, so you brought the example of the coffee berry, and the coffee berry, you said, would attract the parasitoid wasp. Did I say it right? Parasitoid.
Yeah. But, you know, coffee berry, I can't speak exactly to coffee berry, but I know one that is specifically associated with a lot of parasitoid wasps is Baccharis pilularis. That is a coyote brush.
Coyote brush.
It's one of the hardiest, you know, hardiest bushes in California.
Yeah.
It's, a lot of farmers don't like it, but listen, it is going to raise your parasitoid population on your landscape. It is super hardy. It is a beautiful plant, really.
Yeah.
And you can get a bunch of different varieties to fit your needs. You can get low-growing ones. This is Pigeon Point. You know, it's like grows to 4 feet. You can get really big ones that'll grow up to 15, 20 feet. You know, whatever you need.
Right. And then what are a couple other that are just like good standards for
good
hedgerows?
Standards. I'm blanking. I'm a native plant.
You already said you said the coffee plant, the coyote bush, and it doesn't matter. If you stutter or whatever, we'll just edit that stuff out. It doesn't matter.
Sages are really good.
Sages.
You know, they're more to Southern California native.
Or any drought area. I mean, that's definitely going to be important for people, you know.
Definitely. We like big composite flowers are... really good. So our buckwheats really good. Provides
a lot
of
buckwheat. Yeah, go ahead.
Like
what?
An Eriogonum buckwheat, not like a shrub buckwheat.
Okay.
Not your cover crop buckwheat.
I see.
Completely different families.
Okay.
We're talking about your different Eriogonums. Those provide these big like umbel shape flower heads. Mm-hmm. They're like these big puffy white.
And that's going to attract the beneficial insects.
Yeah, they really provide a lot of pollen, which is a secondary source of food for them.
And it would also be good for bees then as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good bee.
Great.
It's a good pollinator resource in general.
Cool.
So Ceanothus and Eriogonum, really good flowering resources.
What are the common names again?
So the Ceanothus is the California lilac.
Oh, okay.
And the Eriogonum is the buckwheat. And there's a lot of different species that you can find at nurseries that can fit your projects.
Cool. Great. And then so that's the hedgerows. Any, what other type of habitats are you working to create with your work with
yeah,
the farms?
I mean, we work with, you know, it's pollinator strips, beetle banks.
What's a beetle bank?
Exactly. It's more of a grassed bank of plants. It's more for your ground nesting, ground inhabiting predators,
right.
Such as beetles, spiders. Beetle banks are ladybugs, lady beetles.
So all those beetles and spiders are going to be your beneficial insect to combat pests that are going to be in your garden.
You know, I can't say, I don't want to say all.
Yeah, of course.
You know, nature's so complex ecosystems are so complex.
Yeah.
It's so hard to quantify anything as all or none. But
I mean, we're at least trying to get a general idea so that whoever's watching this can sort of try to use some of these concepts and play around with them in their own garden or
if you're gonna go
their
for,
farm.
You know, if you want to, you know, we plant a lot, we use a lot of hedges, a lot of grasses. We use a lot of grasses in our hedges sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
People associate grasses with pests, tall grasses.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're using native grasses and sedges, and there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So one native plant we use a lot that's a grass is Muhlenbergia regens. It's deer grass. Grows really tall, provides a lot of habitat for lady beetles. Carcinoid beetles that feed on, you know, pests, and a lot of arachnids. And then we also use sedges when it's a little wetter. So we'll use like Carex species, which is a type of sedge, and they're really good rhizomatous spreading native cover. So Carex, Barberry is the one I'm current, you know, I use a lot in Watsonville area on the coast. But there's a lot of good ones, there's Abnupta. I can go on and on.
Do those have common names or those?
It's just they don't really have common names.
Okay.
It's
sedge.
Look up Carex sedge.
Carex sedge. Okay.
And there's native. If you want to go find good native plants,
there you go.
Go to calscape.org. It's called Calscape. They can help you make a list. And then if you have any other questions, you know, go to wildfarmalliance.org and we have a ton of resources and you can reach out to me. My name's Nick. You can find me on the website and I'll help answer questions.
Fantastic. And then what about the birds?
I mean, so there's probably researchers here that know more about these birds than me, but we work with a lot of bluebird boxes, and we work with researchers like Matt Johnson on owl boxes and kestrel boxes. We have our own bluebird nest program. We install boxes on farms. You can get there's a parameters for boxes. You put them on poles, and basically bluebirds are awesome. You want to attract them onto your landscape.
When you say a bluebird, is that like a blue jay or is that something different?
It's a different one. It's actually it's in the family Turdidae. It's related to the American robin. And it's a bluebird. There's an eastern and a western bluebird, as well as a mountain bluebird. And they are very fond of vineyards in particular, because they like open spaces for nesting. They will eliminate tens of thousands of insects from your vineyard in like one nesting season. And they'll nest, you know, over and over.
That's great.
They're really awesome.
Awesome. And then if you wanted to build your own box, is there a resource?
Yeah, definitely. Cornell Lab. Cornell has a whole resource. They'll show you the dimensions of all different types of boxes.
So that's Cornell University?
Yeah, Cornell University in New York has, you just go to their website, go to Cornell, look up Cornell Bird Box Plans.
Okay.
They will have the whole plans. They'll rate it from like easy to difficult. They'll tell you when to put it up, like all that information.
You could probably just Google that. Cornell bird boxes will come right up. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And
great.
So they're a really good resource. And yeah, just make sure if you're, there's a lot of things to consider if you're putting up bird boxes. And that's, you know, you have like a lot of predators around. If you're spraying, you don't want things, you know, you want to make sure that the birds are safe as well.
Yeah. Like this chicken behind us.
Yeah, precisely.
That's not the kind of bird that you guys are trying to attract usually.
It's all part of the same.
Right.
It's all part of the system.
Okay, well, hey, thank you so much for your time and all your good work.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thanks for interviewing me.
Yeah.